This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is a podcast I'm very much looking forward to because today we have a really outstanding guest. He's a great communicator on the subject of the cholesterol hypothesis, a hypothesis which some believe is settled science. In fact, we are bankrolling an entire segment of the pharmaceutical industry on the cholesterol hypothesis and lowering it artificially with medications. He has some problems with that. He's Dr. David Diamond, and he is a PhD in biology with an emphasis in neuroscience and a professor at the University of South Florida. He has weighed in extensively on this controversy, and I think it's really worthwhile to hear what he has to say on the subject. So welcome, Dr. Diamond. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me, Ron, and please call me David.
Oh, indeed. Okay. David, you know, first I'm going to hit you with is that, you know, what you have to say is highly controversialized because it is thought that cholesterol denialism or statin denialism is on a par with the vaccine denialism or global warming denialism. It's, junk science. And in fact, I'm going to hit you up front with some of your critics. Presumably, you're familiar with Dr. Steve Nissen. He's
sure.
A prominent cardiologist. And recently, he weighed in an editorial in Annals of Internal Medicine last year, 2017. He says that statin denialism is a deadly internet-driven cult. And I'm quoting.
Yes.
He says, quote, "We are losing the battle for the hearts and minds of our patients." And it's alleged that, you know, by throwing a wrench into the well-oiled machinery of the cholesterol-lowering industry, they were putting patients at risk. In fact, he cites a statistic that there's a great deal of non-compliance among people who take statins. Only 61% who are given a statin are adherent after 3 months. And he alleges because of guys like you. And and that there are... In fact, another of your critics says, "I am not sure why Americans are so susceptible to these, quote, charlatans." Whoa.
Right.
Harsh
right,
language.
Exactly.
So I'm challenging you with those statements. So what do you have to say?
Wow. So you've gone right to the end of the story in which Steve Nissen has, in a sense, told a fable in which... all these people who are questioning statins are largely uneducated internet troll cultists.
Right. These
are not real scientists. And it comes across in his editorial. And it's really quite offensive to see him refer to these people, the people who question statins and point out the adverse effects. In fact, I specifically have been addressed in an op-ed. An op-ed was written by a Duke University professor that specifically said that I am dangerous. I happened to be on another podcast in which I was interviewed and Steve Nissen was also interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And after people listened to the two of us, and this is on record, they went to their cardiologists and said, you know, I think David Diamond makes more sense than Steve Nissen.
Okay, so that was a losing proposition
for the
establishment.
Steve Nissen is is the top guy. He's Absolutely. The number one cardiologist in the country.
Indeed.
And what was frightening to the cardiologist was these people said, I'm going to stop taking my statins. And so a cardiologist wrote an op-ed and said, David Diamond is dangerous. And who is this guy? He's a neuroscientist. He has no right to mm-hmm. be writing about heart disease and statins. So in a sense, you've started at the end of the story, in which here I am, really 40 years I've been a neuroscientist, and I have papers, 100 papers I've published on the brain. And so people questioned, specifically in the op-ed, how can I be saying anything about heart disease when it wasn't my original specialty?
Mm-hmm. But you do have a PhD in biology and organic chemistry and biochemistry, and I think you really can lay claim to understanding the processes that underlie human physiology. I mean, that's part of the deal when you're a neuroscientist.
Well, I have to say, it might be good for us to take a step backward because, yes, I do have a degree in biology, but, you know, I don't want any false pretense here. My specialty for the first 30 years of my career was the brain, and it was not about heart disease. Even though I do actually study stress and PTSD, so therefore I learn about heart disease. But I really want to emphasize, 10 years ago, I had no idea. I couldn't imagine I would be on a podcast with you where I'd be lecturing about heart disease. Because frankly, 10 years ago, I knew little more than the guy on the street about heart disease and cholesterol. All I knew, frankly, about heart disease was that if you eat fat, especially red meat and saturated fat, it'll clog your arteries and you have a heart attack. So I'm sort of sharing with you my level of ignorance 10 years ago. And so I never would have expected to be able to be giving lectures. I've been invited to cardiology conferences to give keynote lectures. And it's absolutely astounding. And these people don't even know that I'm a neuroscientist by training. Mm-hmm. So I want you to understand my background is neuroscience.
I will say this, though, is that you have also the advantage, unlike many physicians, because physicians, yeah, they're trained in science, but they're not, it's not so much pure science, it's applied science. You have the ability to read a study and critique a study and understand statistics. That's certainly part of analysis of any paper that you might read in, say, a neuroscience journal. The same rules apply to studies that you review in the cardiology realm, right?
So I actually have a few advantages. The first, as you say, is I'm trained as a scientist. So my work is to develop hypotheses, to evaluate science. I'm a reviewer for numerous journals. I'm an editorial board for numerous journals, including nutritional neuroscience. And so that's my training, is to evaluate science. That's the first thing that I've got going for me. The second thing I have to tell you is this is started off very personal, and this is in my talks. 10 years ago, when I show some of my blood test lipid values, my cholesterol was awful. I plugged in my numbers, and I was at a very high likelihood, very high risk for heart disease. You plug in my triglycerides were 750, and my HDL was about 30. So you just put those two numbers together, and you're talking about a 15 times greater risk of heart disease than someone with ideal lipids. And perhaps just to say that number, 750, alarms cardiologists when I say what I had. And I had that 750, and as a scientist, I was monitoring my lipids year after year. And this is from 1997 to 2007, I'm reading American Heart Association, what I should be doing, low-fat diet, exercise, year after year. Every time I would take a blood test, I would expect those triglycerides to drop and my HDL to go up, and then I would be okay. Instead, and I've got the data for this, the triglycerides are rock solid, stable, between 700 and 800, and you'd like for them to be below 150. Most people are below 100. And the HDL, you want to be above 40, and here I am at like 30 to 35. The ratio for me between the triglycerides and the HDL was frightening.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, 2007, I had that talk. You know, everybody hates that talk you have with your doctor. My doctor just sat me down and said, it's been 10 years. You've tried your best. And just like the commercial, exercise and diet haven't worked. You must go on Lipitor. And he handed me the prescription. It is time for you to go on Lipitor. and frankly, I want you to understand also, this is a sort of an advantage I have. I am not against medication. I actually been well funded in my research by drug companies. I'm not against drug companies. I'm not personally against medication. I'm not against drug company funded research. Because my work is related to antidepressants, so I've had quite a bit of work funded by the drug companies that produce antidepressants.
You're not an herbalist, you're not a developer of vitamins and supplements.
Exactly. I am not a promoter of supplements. I have worked with numerous drug companies in my neuroscience research, and I'm not against medication. I simply evaluate the medication from a scientific perspective. So as they say, my motivation is pure. It was first to understand why were my triglycerides just astronomically high? Why was my HDL low? And if necessary, fine, I would take the medication. I remember saying that to myself 10 years ago. But I said, I might as well read a few papers. I mean, I've got a PhD in biology. The least I can do is read some papers on triglycerides and understand, you know, maybe why are they high? My doctor told me I had familial hypertriglyceridemia. It's a genetic disease. Mm-hmm. Nothing I could do about it.
Your body is making it, so on and so forth. Yeah.
Exactly. My body is simply making too many triglycerides, and this is a serious risk factor for heart disease. Now, I had no heart disease in my family, but and I even asked my parents about it. I said, do you have high triglycerides? And both said no. So I happened to get this random mixture of genes that ended up with my high triglycerides. That's where I'm coming from. So in a sense, I've got an advantage that this is very personal for me. This isn't about money. This isn't about having sort of a horse in the race. I have no philosophy against medication. I am not being paid by drug companies or anyone, frankly, to give you the opinions that I'm going to give today. This is just based 100% on research that in part became personal. And then as I learned more and more, I started to share my information with the public.
Well, it sounds like your message is threefold. And, you know, the first aspect of it is, you know, does meat and or saturated fat, do they per se result in cardiovascular disease? The second part of your message has to do with the implications of having a high LDL cholesterol, which right now is it's the major criterion for giving people statin drugs to lower their cholesterol. We watch the LDLs, and if the LDLs are above a certain level, boom, you know, you're eligible, you're a candidate
right.
for a statin drug. Then finally, the final point that I want to come to is your impartial evaluation of the real efficacy or the risk-benefit equation of taking statin medications. I think fully a quarter of Americans now are prescribed
right.
statin medications, so it's a real big deal.
Right.
And if they're not that effective, and if they may cause more harm than good in so many individuals, then maybe we got to rethink it. So let's start with the diet part of this, you know, and where we may have
right.
taken a wrong turn in terms of diet advice.
Now, diet was important as well because I was overweight, so this was a concern as well. I was gaining weight. I was never obese. I was never diagnosed with diabetes, but I was clearly fat. I was 25 pounds heavier than I am now, and now I'm in pretty good shape. So I was noticeably overweight, but the frustrating thing was I just kept gaining a couple pounds a year until it was really obvious. And so that was one thing. Diet was important to me. I didn't understand why I was gaining weight.
And you were exercising.
I had grown up.
You live in...
Oh, I was exercising like crazy.
South Florida,
yeah,
you have opportunities for outdoor activities. You're playing tennis, you write, and... So.
Exactly. And in fact, what was so frustrating was I really had so little energy. I was trying to do aerobics and tennis, but frankly, I just couldn't last very long. And I had a lot of joint pain. You know, I was taking a daily aspirin. I was taking additional Advil after I would play tennis. So I had a lot of frustration at the time because things just weren't working right for me. So when you raised the issue of diet, this was very important to me. It wasn't just the cholesterol. It was, you know, I'm looking in the mirror and I'm thinking, why am I so damn fat? I'm working too hard to be gaining weight. So that was the first thing I wanted to understand was, along with the triglycerides and HDL, why was it I was having so much difficulty losing weight? So I have to tell you, I had a bit of an epiphany when I found my very first paper, which was called Carbohydrate-Induced Lipemia. And it was a concept that I had not known anything about, which was consumption of carbohydrates increases blood lipids. And this is why, to me, I had no concept that carbohydrates are converted to mm-hmm. lipids. And then I saw a case study, a single individual who had the same triglycerides that I had. This is a paper published in around 1970, 75. An individual had triglycerides at 750, same as me. And he went on an ultra-low-carb diet, eating lots of fat of any kind, including animal fat. And the triglycerides plummeted to about 100.
Now, this is very counterintuitive because you think the fat that passes your lips goes right into your arterial beds, and that's how we derive triglycerides. After all, they are a form of circulating fats.
We think, and we've actually been given this idea so much, really still through the American Heart Association, that when we eat fat, we will get fat and we're at risk for heart disease, especially the saturated fat, which primarily you're going to see that in animal products and tropical oils. So I had grown up with the idea, until 10 years ago I was 50, I had grown up with the idea my whole life that eating animal fat was hazardous. And so I did restrict red meat consumption. I restricted animal fat. I much preferred vegetable oil to any kind of animal, to butter. So I was having corn oil, as well as, of course, people were having olive oil, but it didn't seem to much matter. You want to have vegetable oil. So, again, I sort of have no problem pointing out my ignorance 10 years ago, because even though I knew biology and about the brain, I had no background at that time in what actually caused blood lipids. And so what has happened in the last 10 years, which is what I'm sharing with people now, is what I have learned. I started with just a couple of papers, and I've now got a library of a couple thousand papers covering the very three topics you just talked about, which are, first is diet, and particularly, where did it come from, this demonization of saturated fat, the idea that if you eat animal fat, it will block your arteries and you develop heart disease. So that's the first thing. That's what I had to learn to understand. And the second thing, what about the cholesterol, the actual LDL in our blood? Is it something we need to fear? And finally, I really dove into the statin literature to understand, well, what's the real benefit? And I have to say, I said it to myself, if there is a substantial benefit to lowering cholesterol pharmacologically and there are minimal adverse effects, then I'm all for it. But what I found really alarmed me when I saw how minuscule the benefits were and how consistently described are the adverse effects of the statin.
So there's a little bit of history of science involved in the adoption of the low-fat guidelines. Could you briefly outline that for us?
You know, I cover that in my lectures. And what I found, actually, was about 150, 160 years ago, there was a fellow faced with the same problem I was. A man named William Banting was 60 years of age, lived in London, about 1860. Overweight, weighed 200 pounds. Went to his doctor. Doctor couldn't help him. He was doing everything, exercising, starving himself, couldn't do anything. And he was in very poor health. His doctor is absolutely brilliant because he had learned at the time from Claude Bernard that, in fact, you don't need carbohydrates. There is no need for carbs. It's not actually even a nutrient. It's a source of energy. And so he put together that if you don't need to consume carbohydrates, that, in fact, if you do consume carbohydrates, that your liver will convert it to fat. This is not 150 years ago. So he told this fellow, William Banting, he said, basically, cut out the bread, the potatoes. I mean, it was very primitive at the time, but that's the essence of what he told him. And Banting lost about 50 pounds and lived another 20 years. And so living into your 80s in London, 1860s, that's not bad, right? So he became very healthy, and that's the first thing I read. And then in my talks, I cover the history over the next 100 years. And I'm talking literally on the 100th anniversary of the book that Banting wrote, which is actually called Letter on Corpulence, 1963 in JAMA. You find the rediscovery of low-carb diet being ideal for losing weight healthfully. And it's published in 1963. Now, the great thing about science is that even if you don't know what anyone else has done, you can replicate a real finding. So what I love about the JAMA paper in 1963 was that they didn't even know about the century of history that had preceded them. I mean, they're publishing this as if a new finding. Carbohydrates cause people to get fat and cutting carbs. Now, what was really crucial was that Atkins, Robert Atkins, was a cardiologist who read that paper in 1963, and he became convinced that these people were right. And that's what he integrated into his cardiology program. And it's 10 years later that he published his book about low-carb diet.
The diet
revolution. People think that Well, the diet revolution. And maybe part of the problem was he presented his work as a revolution. And it really wasn't appropriate because essentially what Atkins came up with wasn't really much different from what Banting had used 100-some years before. So really, people say, well, Atkins' diet was a fad. No, that diet has really been around, frankly, for all of humanity. Because if you look, what I have learned is if you look in the natural world, before we had agriculture and Western civilization, in the real world, there's very little sugar. There's very little digestible carbohydrates. The real world is filled with indigestible carbohydrates from vegetables and the really primitive fruits that are natural. And it's, other than that, you've got protein and fat. And that's essentially what humans evolved to consume. And so what we really understand now is people were in and out of ketosis throughout their evolutionary history. And in fact, it is incredibly unnatural. It is non-physiological that we are chronically skyrocketing our blood sugar and insulin is released. I mean, this is not something that ever happened before in human evolution. So what I really learned is that it was all the bread and the sugar I was eating. I thought because I'm having bread without butter, I pat myself on the back and say, well, that's really good. You cut
very
back
virtuous
on the butter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought I was virtuous, but it turns out I was just ignorant. And so by cutting back on the bread, I've dramatically cut back on bread. I actually don't strive to be ketogenic. I do enjoy my carbohydrates. So I'm on about, I've learned that I can go on about 50 to 100 grams of carbohydrates a day, which allows me to have a little bit of enjoyment of the carbs. And I've cut my triglycerides by 75% without any medication. And I've dramatically increased my HDL to what's considered to be a much safer zone. And I lost 25 pounds. So to me, the diet has worked. My biomarkers have all improved. And so I feel so much better. And the other thing is now when I exercise, I've got more energy than I had 10 years ago, in part because I've lost a good amount of weight. But I think it's also I'm keeping my blood sugar low. Potentially, I may very well be increasing my ketones as well. So the diet works for me. I also want to emphasize that I have studied diet, and I realize people can lose weight essentially on any diet. You can starve yourself and lose weight. You go on a low-fat diet and lose weight. It's not just the weight loss that matters. It's to be healthy with weight loss. And it is so important that we consume fat because fat helps us to absorb nutrients. And that's what I think is important about the low-carb diet, is that when you're eating the fat, and I've talked about these studies when I present them, that we actually absorb more nutrients into our blood, into our serum, when we consume fat along with our meal.
Indeed.
So that's the diet part of this whole adventure I've been on.
Well, it's a good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, I want to move along to a rather surprising contention, which is that LDL cholesterol, the presumed villain in this drama, in this murder mystery, is really not the culprit that it was once thought to be, according to today's guest, Dr. David Diamond. And also, our remedy for LDL cholesterol, statin drugs, they ain't what they're cracked up to be. That's a controversial assertion. We're going to back it up with some facts when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Dr. David Diamond, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.